Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And in this episode, I am joined by Alex Light, who is a body positivity activist and journalist. Now, the body positivity and body confidence conversation is one that we haven't really had before on this podcast. And partly because it is something that I think needs to be approached with sensitivity and authority and not taken lightly. And for that reason, Alex is the perfect person to speak to. She is incredibly honest, has really been through it in terms of issues with anorexia, binge eating, and the anxiety and depression that can go hand in hand with that. And she realized the power of sharing her own story with others. She did this originally on social media and realized pretty quickly from the responses and feedback that honesty really is vital when it comes to talking about eating disorders, body positivity, and self-esteem. That goes hand in hand with one's own self-image. And it really is an understatement to say that all of the above is very complicated. And when you think about it, being bombarded with images via the media of women who look a certain way is going to be confusing and or excluding if you are not a perfectly proportioned model who makes clothes look good or who looks good in clothes, whatever way you want to look at it. And I'll be really honest with you, that is most of us. I've been backstage at Fashion Week, I've worked on fashion shoots, I've booked models. And they are not people that you come across every single day. In terms, their physical proportions are not the kind of proportions that you see every single day. To the point that when I am out and about and I am walking through London and I see someone, I can go, oh, that's a model. You can just tell. It might seem like a daft example to talk about how seeing perfection in the media, which obviously sells, it might seem silly to bring it to cookery, but if you try and copy a recipe out of a cookery book and what you create looks nothing like the picture that you've tried to emulate, you feel a bit rubbish, right? I mean, it might still taste good. The component parts might all be completely fine and the composition from a taste point of view might be great, but if it doesn't look the same way, you can feel a bit embarrassed. I've done that where I've tried to make something and I'm like, oh, sorry about this, it's gone a bit floppy, or whatever it might be. If I was trying to make a souffle, whatever it might have been, you sort of offer it up with apologies. And I feel that that's something that can sometimes happen with how we see ourselves in clothes or how we see ourselves physically. I definitely do feel as though I offer myself up with an apology or with an excuse or with a, oh, I know I'm not, but, you know, hormones. You know, I feel like I have to say something, justify myself. And that's really sad. Then there's all the things that go hand in hand, like attraction, feeling attractive. And there's just a lot of muddy water here that makes it quite difficult actually to sort of come up with a very definitive avenues of conversation or even sort of leading us into it. And this is where I really appreciate Alex's point of view and how she shares in this conversation. Her insights, her kindness that go hand in hand with her messaging is a place and tone that she's clearly fought really hard to get to. And I don't want to underestimate or undervalue the work that she's put in because I think she's done incredible work. So in this conversation, you're going to hear us talk about body positivity, about Alex's own experience, how she's reached a point where she feels more comfortable than she has before, emotional eating, intuitive eating. I learned a lot in that section, trust me, and a lot more. And it wasn't until I sat down to have this conversation with Alex and then listened to it back after the recording that I realized how much this affects me too. And I genuinely can't think of a better person to have had this conversation with. So I'm really delighted to say that joining me on this episode of The Emma Gunn Show, it's Alex Light. So So as I said, the lovely Alex Light joins me. Thank you, Alex, for joining me on the show.
I'm really excited to be on the show. I've been listening to it for ages, so I'm really excited to be here.
No, I'm really, really glad to have you on, because this isn't a subject that I've actually approached on the show previously.
Okay.
You are a body confidence activist.
Yes.
A content creator, a damn good one.
Thank you very much.
And you have... Okay, if somebody is listening to the show and they go to your Instagram feed right now, they are going to see somebody who very confidently talks about body confidence really well, and from a place of not just personal experience, but also from you do a lot of research on it. You know, you're not just this is how I'm feeling about body confidence today. You know, you're you draw from a lot of resources. But it's been a long, long journey to get there.
A hell of a long journey, yes.
And I think it probably is for everybody, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I don't think anyone just comes into body positivity straight away. There's got to be lots of stepping stones leading to it, for sure.
Why do you think that it has become, like, I remember somebody saying to me, oh yeah, I'm going to do a BOPO thing. And I was like, what? Is that a Teletubby? A couple of years ago. What's BOPO? I literally was like, someone sent me a message saying BOPO, and I was racking my brains. But I had no idea. Why do you think it has become what it has become? Because it is a huge thing right now, and things are changing. We'll unpick it during the course of this episode, but we've got things like the big thing with Nike, the Tess Halliday cover. Is it Halliday or Holiday?
Holiday.
Holiday, yes. Cover. Just won the PPA award for cover of the year.
Yes.
So it's... And that would never have happened a few years ago. You would never have had a model of Tess's size, because she is a plus size model, on the cover of a mainstream women's monthly magazine. Yeah. And so it's all just, it's what we call in the media, it's reached critical mass.
It absolutely has. I actually think it's a backlash against what we've been seeing on social media. Like, since Instagram became so big and literally changed our world, changed the world as we know it. And for years on Instagram, all we would see is just this one narrow body ideal, and we'd see it over and over and over and over again. And it was just, you know, this body ideal was just sort of perpetuated. And I think body positivity was just a backlash. Like, this, we're not seeing our sizes, our body shapes represented. So it was started by a few key people in the industry, like Iskra Lawrence.
Who's been on the show. Love Iskra.
She has, yeah. She's amazing. And she's actually someone that helped me a lot, you know, during a really dark time for me. I was in the sort of midst of an eating disorder, and she really helped me.
We'll have to come back to that, because I have a lot of time for Ms. Lawrence.
Oh, she's fabulous. Mm. Yeah, I love her. So yeah, started by these key people in the industry, and then these people that were saying, like, why do we have to look like this? Why do we have to fit this body ideal? Why can't we enjoy ourselves and celebrate ourselves as we are? Mm. You know, celebrate our DNA as it is. You know, we can't change our DNA. What are we doing? Why are we spending our lives being so miserable, trapped in this horrible cycle and obsessed with diet culture? And I think it was a backlash. And one that's grown massively.
Yeah. Do you think it really is do you think it is as simple as we've seen, let's just use the word thin, can we? Or is that really?
Yeah.
So if I think about watching Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
So how old was I? Like 11 years old when that came out. I think about how thin Cynthia Rhodes and Jennifer Grey were, and how when I bought white denim or like denim shorts and white plimsolls, I didn't look like that. And so I thought I was wrong.
Right.
Does it stem from that, do you think? Literally just right from a very young age, you are bombarded with a particular look, and if you don't look like it, which not all of us do, we're all the same species, but body shapes and sizes are different. Weight notwithstanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some people have short legs, some people have long legs, some people have long bodies, some people have short bodies. But what we tend to see in the media is fully in proportion.
Yeah.
Human bodies,
and the diversity is, like, should be, you know, that's what should be magic about our species. It's magical, the fact that we are so unique and so different. But yeah, it stems from that. It stems from one body type only being shown, and also this diet culture, you know, that it's our society's belief that being thin and losing weight and looking a certain way is like the most important thing in our lives. You know, it's the ultimate female ambition to lose weight and be thin, and that's been drummed into us, that's been like hammered in since we were able to absorb media and
images,
and people's just conversations, you know.
So the backlash is definitely is definitely happening without a shadow of a doubt. How did you come to the place where you are to be a really strong positive voice in the middle of it?
It's been such a long journey. I'm worried that I'm going to bore you with my long journey, so I'll try and condense it. So
we're not afraid of feelings on the Emma Gunn Show.
Okay, here we go. You've got a few hours. So it all started, my eating patterns have been disordered from a very young age, probably from, you know, before I was age 10, I'd say. I was always like a chubby kid, and people would point it out, not in a nasty way, but like in an endearing, you know, you're adorable, you're cute, you know, like chubby. But I always felt different and I didn't like it. I hated it. I had low self-esteem and I just, you know, I had boobs before anyone else, any of my peers, and everyone was fascinated and intrigued by them. And I wanted the ground to just swallow me up. I wanted them to go away. And I would like hunch over, you know, a problem that I still have with my posture to this day, because I was just trying to hide.
I'm the same. I sit like that. Look.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible, isn't it?
Because to put my shoulders back feels like going, I'm a look at these
here then. Here we go. Yeah. But if you actually do it in front of the mirror, if you go from hunching to standing tall, you look like a different person. But it's something that's been like inbuilt in us. But
that's another thing. We're going to unpick a few things there.
Yeah.
But that's another thing. It's the fact that as well as being bigger or chubby, whatever the right word is, it's also boobs are sexual.
They're sexual.
People look at them and you realise that they're not. And I remember that happened to me when I was quite young. You realise that people are looking at you, you're like, something's different, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. And it's not a nice feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think all this happened at around the same time that I was learning that thinness equated to being good, being happy, being successful, and also sort of me realising that just dieting is a way of life. It's just how you live. You live on a diet, you know. It's kind of like all I heard and saw around me. So I started dieting. I reckon I was about 12 when I started dieting. I can't remember exactly, but I think about 12 when I went to primary school, started dieting. And
wowzers.
From then until probably just over a year ago, I don't think I've had a... my eating patterns have just been completely disordered.
Does disordered eating look like? Is it just a sense that it's not three square meals a day?
Yeah, so obviously I'm not a medical professional, but how I see it is it's basically you're not eating what your body feels. You're not eating what your body needs and what you feel like eating. You're eating because you think it's what you need to eat.
Okay.
To either diet or you're eating emotionally. But disordered eating can take on all forms. Yeah. Like
it's an umbrella term.
It's an umbrella term, yeah. So from that point I dieted. I tried every diet under the sun. Atkins, Dukan, soup diet,
Dukan.
Salad diet.
I interviewed Dukan once. I couldn't make head nor tail of it.
Oh, my God. It's just like an even more hideous Atkins diet in my eyes. I did like a don't eat lunch so my mum wouldn't notice, but just eat dinner diet. I tried everything from all throughout school and uni, and I dieted myself up because that's what happens. You know, you go up when you diet, your weight goes up. I dieted myself up to a weight that I was really uncomfortable with. And, you know, I don't want to say what weight because I it's kind of an arbitrary number, and I don't want anyone to have to like compare their weight to mine.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I remember working out with a personal trainer years ago, probably about 15 years ago, And it was when, I don't know if you remember this, in some women's magazines, if there was a weight loss feature, they'd put obviously the before and after weight.
Yeah.
And I remember they did one with a couple of celebrities, and I said, but so-and-so's 8 stone 2. And he went, I train her, she's not. She's
really?
Not.
Really?
Yeah, she's like 15 pounds heavier than that, but that's beside the point. She's got a completely different build to you. So I agree with you. I think comparing weights is, it's completely dangerous. It is. Yeah. It really is apples and oranges.
It is. It, even dress size as well. Mm. Like, it gives you an indicator, dress size, more so than weight. But I can't tell you the amount of people that ask me, like, what weight are you? Please just give us a rough idea of, like, what weight you are, just to make myself feel better. And I'm like, no way, because I could be, I could weigh a lot less than you think I look, or I could weigh a lot more, it's arbitrary. Where was I?
Sorry, I just wanted to come back to the weight thing, because I do think it's really important that we sort of...
Yeah.
Because the first thing you do is, it's like if you ask someone how much they earn and they tell you, you will immediately go, I earn less or I earn more.
Yeah, even though you're in a different industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing with weight. So you dieted yourself up.
So dieted up... I'm not going to say what weight exactly, but it was a weight that I was really uncomfortable with, and I could tell a lot of people around me were uncomfortable with, and I would get a lot of suggestions from people on, like, you know, I've heard this diet's really good, or I've heard this diet's really good. And, you know, friends would say to me, I remember a friend saying to me, you'd be so pretty if you were a size 12. I remember that, and that's stuck with me. It's absolutely stuck with me.
That was what I used to get a lot as a kid. Yeah. If you just lost weight, you'd be so gorgeous.
So pretty. Yeah. You've got such a pretty face.
Yeah. Your eyes.
And it's almost like a sympathetic, like people feel sorry. Like, I remember feeling like people were feeling sorry for me. So at that point, juice diets were all the rage.
Oh, God.
They came into fashion and they were everywhere.
Yeah, because how old are you, by the way?
Now I'm 30.
Right, okay.
Nearly 31.
I thought you were going to say, I don't like to say my age.
No, no. I thought you meant how old I was then. I think I was about...
Sorry.
It's all right. Probably about 20... About 23 then, So I started on a juice diet. And I'm very, I don't know if you're like this, but my mentality is very black or white, or nothing.
Yeah.
That's how I work. That's how I function. That's what speaks to me. So the juice diet clicked with me, because the idea that I just didn't have to consume any food.
Yeah.
It just clicked for me. And so I lost weight. I was astonished at the amount of weight I lost, of course, because I wasn't putting anything in my mouth for 5 days.
So you'd juice for 5 days?
So I juiced for 5 days. I did the juice diet first, and I was like, this is for me. So then I did it 2 weeks after to lose a little bit more weight, and then it became like a weekly thing. I'd do it Monday to Friday every week, the juice diet, and on the weekends I would binge and purge, essentially. And then I started reducing the amount of juices I would have in the day during those juice diet days. So I think you have like 5, and I go down, until eventually I was just eating boiled sweets, just sucking on boiled sweets to kind of calm the feeling of hunger. And then I binge and purge at the weekends. It was a mess. I was in an absolute mess. And then I was obviously at a very unhealthy weight, like very unhealthy. And my mum made me seek help. So I went to a psychiatrist who diagnosed me with anorexia binge purge subtype. And I went to a therapist, started therapy, and it helped my body image issues massively. But it didn't really tackle my eating problems. And I'd had so many years of just crazy disordered eating. It was such a mess that, like, looking back, it was never going to cure my, you know, tackle my eating problems. I needed, like, real help. So I started to put on weight because, you know, my body image issues were helped. And I realised that I had to start eating and nourishing my body. I was like, what am I doing? This is crazy. So I started eating.
What was that point when you realised that you had to? Because I think sometimes when you're on the down, when you're losing weight, you get a lot of positive responses, you get a lot of admiration, and so that almost is another impetus to keep going. So how come it, when did it stop being a, oh, Alex, you look so great, look at what you've done, to, oh dear?
And actually, that's something I talked about on Instagram the other day. I was asking people to please stop commenting on people's weight. Don't say you look so thin or you've lost so much weight, because when I was at that really unhealthy weight and just sucking on boiled sweets, that was my only form of nutrition, I'd get, you're my like thinspo, you're my goal weight, oh my god, you're like my size zero pinup. And honestly, I got all those comments, and people were like, I felt like it was the, and I think it is still to this day, like it felt like the biggest achievement ever, because like I got that much positive reinforcement from it. So I asked people on Instagram, actually, I just said, just stop commenting on it. You think you're giving someone a compliment, but actually what you're doing is just further like locking us into this cycle of thinking that our worth and our value is based on our weight.
And that thin is better.
And that thin is better, yeah. Because why is thin better? It's not.
Do you know what I remember years ago, and I shan't say who it is, but a very famous British actress was on a photo shoot with her, and it was around the time, because there have been many, many backlashes about size zero and things, but never quite to this point the way that it is right now. And I remember being on a shoot and saying to her something, and she's very quintessentially like model tall figure,
right?
And
I'm
going to
make you tell me after.
Of course, yeah. But, and she didn't say it in an unreasonable way. I just said, why do you think designers are making these clothes? They're basically cut, like the fit models are boys. Mm. Like a lot of the fit models are, you know, very, very tiny.
Yeah.
And she said, the fact of the matter is that clothes look better on thinner people.
Mm.
And then who was it yesterday who I saw? I think it was Jamila Jamil saying, if you can't make your clothes look good on all sizes, then you're not, you don't have any talent.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I know, because why? Clothes don't look better on thin people. It's just not true. It's just what we've been conditioned to believe.
Mm.
And it's what we have been conditioned to think as well. When we see those images, that's just what we're conditioned to. But it's just not true.
So how did you get to, would you say that you had a period of recovery? And from the conversations that we've had offline, and you can go into them or not, depending on how comfortable you feel, but it feels like that, it sounds like we're talking in a very sort of bright way, but actually these can become quite toxic tangles and dark knots in one's brain. I was telling Alex this morning, listeners, that I was wearing a t-shirt when I got out of bed, walked to the kitchen, walked back to my bedroom, there's a full-length mirror, and the first thing my brain really told me this morning after get coffee was, oh, you've got really short stumpy legs.
So sad.
And I just take it for granted, just normal. Oh, never show your legs.
But that's one of the things that you can change as well. You can change the way that you talk to yourself and the way that you think about yourself. What was the question? Sorry.
The question was about the fact that actually it's a very, the conversations that one has in one's own head about how you look, even if you're on what might look like a positive journey in terms of perhaps you are losing weight that looks healthy, and so everyone's giving you all these affirmations, but it can be quite a dark dialogue that comes back to not feeling good enough, like feeling like when I am X, whether it's a weight or a size, I will be better.
Yeah. I mean, and I remember getting down and down and down and down to the point where I thought, I can't go down much further than this. But I thought at this point that I was going to feel better and feel happy. And that thought is so scary that there's nowhere to go. Like it always like reassured me to think that if I just got down, I'll be happy. So I know that there's always like something I can do. But the idea that I was going down, down, and down, and I was just not happy, my self-esteem was like rock bottom. And I knew I could never maintain this, but everyone around me was saying, "Oh, you're so thin. Oh my god, you look amazing. You're like a different person."
And you're in a glamorous media job, and you get length clothes, and the clothes fit perfectly, and I mean,
and I started on Instagram as well, and these comments were coming as well on Instagram, you know, like tagging friends in the comments saying this girl's thinspo, this girl's off inspo, and I look back at those photos and I'm like, I just look anorexic, I look so thin, I look ill, my face looks just poorly.
Did you think that it would equate happiness? Did you think? And so what was the feeling when you would get down and you would look at yourself? And when you look at the pictures now and you see, you know, you look poorly, when you looked at them then, did you think, oh, I could still lose a bit more? Like, is your perspective different?
Yeah. I still looked at them and thought, I've got a bit of a double chin. I can see a bit of a double chin there, and my thighs are that. Things that just really annoys me now to even admit, because like, I can't believe that I was ever in such a dark space. But it was really dark. It felt like hell. And I think we're very good, like, especially like women and British, we're good at like downplaying our struggles and what we've been through, and like, that wasn't that bad. But I was talking to my boyfriend about it recently, and I was like, literally, I went through hell and back with it. It was just a nightmare. I don't think I had a happy hour in the entire time.
No. Really?
Yeah, it was, because it's so locked with, like, anorexia is so, like, it's linked with depression and anxiety, and it's just a mess, yeah.
So the weight is one thing. How did the anxiety and depression manifest? Was it all just one big old mess?
Yeah, and even looking back, I can't really untangle eating disorder from the anxiety and depression. They all just come as one. I mean, but the depression was definitely triggered. So say I would go on the scales and I had, you know, stayed the same or put on half a pound, that was it. Then I had to just go into bed and I couldn't get up. I couldn't face the day. I absolutely, like, physically felt like I was not able to.
Do you remember there was an issue of Grazia? And I think they interviewed lots of women about their body image.
Right.
And I think the cover line was, and it was Kelly Brook. I think it was Kelly Brook. Don't quote me on that. She says, publishing a podcast on it. But the cover line, I'm sure, was something like, I get on the scales and that sets the mood for my day. And I remember reading that thinking, oh, wow, yeah. That is bang on the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's worrying.
Yeah.
I'd love to find that issue now. I bet you it is very
it's
troublesome
so
now, given what
our
we're...
climate.
Yeah.
It absolutely is, though. Like, that's how we're... That's what we're, like, programmed to think.
Do you think... Sorry.
I was just... No, I was just going to say that, you know, that we base our success on how much weight we've lost. And, yeah.
Do you think that... do you think that all this sort of honest and open conversation now seems like a really, really good thing, but there might not be as much truth in it as you think? Because what I've noticed, whether it's about body positivity or other things, is that I will toe a particular line publicly about a subject, but it might not be what I would say to my friends. But I know that what I might say to my friends might be misinterpreted. So I feel like... Do you know what I'm trying to get at here? In the sense of, we're sort of having these brilliant positive conversations and we're all driving positively in the right direction. But it's not just all one thing. There are nuances, and you might want to say, yes, actually, I really believe in body positivity. I really believe in body confidence. But I also do think that people look better when they're slimmer. And so but that part of the conversation gets cancelled out and sort of goes on offline. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that's happening?
I actually think that people talk about that online as well, though. I think, like, a lot of body confidence activists tackle those issues and make people realise that they're saying these things and why they're not true, like challenging them. It's kind of like CBD, I guess, like...
CBD or CBT?
CBT. CBD's the...
You've been having too many press releases from beauty brands about
oh
CBD
my God.
Oil. Honestly.
Have I just...
I've had to put the filter on.
Exploded with it.
Anyone would think no one had heard of hashish before.
I know.
Wouldn't they? I mean, anyway, sorry. Sorry, side
I haven't
note,
tried it, have you? I haven't tried any of CBD...
Beauty products.
Yeah, beauty products.
I tried the Kiehl's one, and it's perfectly nice. It's basically like a mild anti-inflammatory. It's a nice serum, but I'm not like...
huge CBD fan.
I think when a product really gets you, so listeners, Alex also writes beauty for magazines, which is why we can easily go into this conversation, is I think if you meet a product and you think, oh, there, I know someone who really, really, really needs that, that's when I get excited. But when I think, yes, if you like it, if you fancy trying CBD, yeah, and you've got the money, okay, that's how I felt about that one. But it was nice when I used it.
Yeah. Okay.
So the conversation... CBT.
Yeah, yes. Challenging our current thinking patterns. And I think a lot of people do speak about issues like that. I don't know if you've been on Reddit, like the Reddit threads on body confidence and body positivity.
I've tried.
It's a rabbit hole. It's an absolute rabbit hole.
I've tried to use Reddit and I just don't think I know how. I need a lesson.
I get sucked in on everything, especially body confidence. And actually, I was looking at the Reddit thread, one of the Reddit threads on Tess Holliday's Cosmo cover. Mm. Obviously it resurfaced because it just won the award.
Yeah, the PPA.
And there is such a divide. There are so many, it's so polarizing.
Where do you stand on it?
I love it. Mm. I absolutely love it. I think it deserved to win an award. I think it was brilliant and just like a message of inclusivity to women who in the past have been absolutely marginalized by society, not just the fashion and beauty industry, but society.
Mm.
And I thought it was just like really good representation and at like a very basic level, just showing the world that like women who look like this do exist, you know?
Do you feel she was potentially exploited at all?
No, I don't think so. Mm. No, I don't think so. I think it's just overwhelmingly positive what's come from this for her and for women who look like her as well.
Mm. I know Farah, she's been on this podcast. Right. I have a lot of time for her. Farah is the editor of Cosmopolitan, listeners.
Yeah.
And so she's just moved though, hasn't she? Sorry, she has just moved, but she was the editor of that particular cover.
Yeah.
And I think she makes very smart choices. But I would be lying if I said I didn't receive it with the same enthusiasm that you did.
Okay.
I felt though, I was like, okay, what is this? What is this for headlines? Is this to get the sales up?
Right.
Which is just, when you're an editor, which is just to validate an activity.
Of course.
And so I don't feel as enthusiastic about it as you do. And now I feel really bad for saying that.
Well, I think it was a brave move. I mean, because I suppose it had never been done. So how did, you know, it was a gamble, right? Mm. They weren't like, this is going to sell. And it's their best-selling cover to date. Is that right? I think it's their best-selling cover ever.
I don't know,
ever.
But I would imagine so.
But I can imagine that it was a huge gamble for them at the time, because it's just something that's never, ever been done before.
Mm.
And, you know, normally, like, if we see a plus-size woman on a magazine cover, they're, like, a size 12.
Can we just... 12, size 12. So a UK size 12, which is an American size 8.
Yes.
That's right. And I don't know what the US... Australian conversion is. But that is not plus size.
No.
A 12 is an, I mean, that is where I would use, air quotes, normal.
And the average UK woman is a size 16.
Mm.
So it's not plus size at all.
Mm.
It's like below average. But that's what we're used to seeing. So Tess's cover was like, it was a shock for everyone.
Do you know what size she is? I don't even know.
I think she's a 26. I think she's a 26, but I don't know if that's American or UK.
Okay.
I think it's a UK.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, UK size 26.
And I just, well, do you think that it's going to open magazine covers for more of these sorts of things?
I hope so. I mean, they obviously, there's going to be the people that talk about her health.
I do, I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, that I'm someone whose BMI has always been in the normal to high range. And there are, I mean, I know whether you believe in BMI or not, you just know that there are health issues. And so, I can't say that I don't look at someone like Tess and think, I don't want her to feel uncomfortable in her body because of what other people are saying about her. But is she aware of the reality of that?
Yeah. See, I think, so with that cover, I was kind of like, I was, I felt that people were confusing like body positivity with health issues.
Okay.
And like for me, the point of that cover was a body positive, inclusive message that actually, and health really is a completely separate issue.
Right.
That's something for her to deal with her doctor.
Mm.
And I don't think it was like a lot of people saying that it was glamorizing obesity, you know, glorifying obesity. Mm. But I think it was just like a really good inclusive message and just a way to stop disenfranchising people who don't look like.
And I agree with that. I don't think, but as I when I used to go on press trips or even when I was in school, because I was in the same school for a long time, but I would always worry about being the fattest girl in the year. That would always be my thing. Like, you come back from summer holiday and you'd be like, you pray that someone had put on a load of weight. So you wouldn't be the biggest girl in the year, which is so pathetic. So I don't want anyone to feel like that. But it depends, and I don't want to make this about tests because I don't think that's fair. But I think if somebody is plus size and if there is a food issue involved there, like if there's a very unhealthy relationship with food there, which would almost be, if they went to a medical professional, it would almost be seen as some form of self-harm.
Yeah.
That's when I just think, well, you wouldn't put somebody on the cover of a magazine who displayed other signs of self-harm and celebrate it.
No, and a lot of people said as well that you shouldn't put anorexic, you know, we're not allowed to put people who are visibly anorexic.
But we've been doing that for decades.
Exactly. But the problem is that unfortunately that you know, anorexic looking girl is very close to society's like ideal.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, an obese body, a fat body, is not aspirational in our current society. So it's dangerous to put those women, those extremely thin women, on the cover of magazines.
Agreed, yeah.
But then I think women who are bigger, even, you know, their health, I don't know, and people say there's health at every size, and I have no idea what the health is like of women who are bigger, like whatever. I just don't know. I don't think any of us know. I think only them and their doctors know. But they should be allowed to access body positivity and should be able to feel that their bodies are worthy of like respect and being seen, no matter what size, no matter what their health is, that no matter what their health status, it should just be a different issue entirely. And they need to have their space on the internet where they can be seen and, you know, show their bodies, like, why not?
And I do agree that somebody should be able to buy a dress, whatever size they are, and have that feeling of feeling, oh, this looks really good on me, and not feel embarrassed about it. And I think that's more where you're coming from, isn't it? It's more the, let's not say one is bad and one is good. Let's begin to broaden that good band so that it's, everyone looks damn great.
Yeah, and take away those like the classifications of like, good and bad.
So
they're just bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I just think, I do think if you really understood how bodies really do look different, they really, really do look very, very different. I don't think we see enough naked people. I'm not suggesting, well, I certainly don't. I'm not suggesting that we need to, I'm not suggesting that we need to suddenly see everybody naked. But I think if you did, I remember I did a TV show with Gok ages ago, Gok Wan.
Oh, yeah.
And I worked in a room with the Naked Army, and they were all in their underwear. But even there, you can kind of get a sense of everybody's built completely differently, and it's not a weight issue.
Yeah, and if you just took a random like cross section of society, they look completely different.
Mm.
Not like what you see on Love Island, you know. That's not a random cross section of society, but they look completely different. All sizes, all shapes, all colours and genders and,
So, you were in the good hands of a professional. So you were diagnosed.
I was diagnosed, yeah.
And are you able to share how you came back and how you got to this point?
Yes. I'm conscious of the fact that I'm going on a bit because the journey is just so long. Like, it wasn't a quick...
You're really
I
not.
I think when I was in, you know, on the journey of recovery, I was always waiting for an epiphany. I always thought I'd have an aha moment, you know, and think, and that's it. Suddenly, like, the fog has cleared and I can... And that just never happened. The journey was long. And I think that's something as well that I would really want people who are listening to this to understand, that it's actually, like, these tiny, like, almost imperceptible moments of, like spurts of growth that just build on top of each other.
Mm.
And they might not even feel good at the time, but eventually one day... it'll build to something that looks like recovery, you know? Because I think, magazines want to say, or like TV wants to say, oh, you know, they were anorexic and then she saw this and it changed her life and she never, you know, but it just doesn't happen that way. Mm. It didn't happen for me that way. But I was always waiting for an epiphany. I think I am a bit of an epiphany junkie anyway. I'm always like...
That's Hollywood. I really believe that's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood, exactly, yeah.
It's storytelling, isn't it? Yeah. There's a destination
and but life is just so much more nuanced than that. And yeah, complicated and complex and messy.
Yeah.
So the body image issues were tackled, but not the eating. And I was weight restored, so I was recovered. In everyone's minds, everyone around me thought, you know, like, this is so good. You've like gained weight, you're better.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And I was not better at all. In fact, I was probably equally as in a dark place, because the binging and purging really ramped up and it became daily and it became very excessive and just really detrimental to the point where I was functioning, but barely. And I broke down this carried on for a few years, and eventually I broke down. My mum said, we were on holiday, and my mum said, you're not right, what's wrong with you? I broke down, and she marched me back to the psychiatrist.
What did you say? What did you, like, when you finally broke down, what were the words that came out?
I said, I can't stop eating.
Right.
I can't stop eating. I'm obsessed. I don't know if anyone listening to this has had problems with binging and purging, but it's so miserable and it's all consuming and it takes over your entire life. And that's how I felt. I can't stop eating. So we went to the psychiatrist and, you know, he said, yeah, you've got, you know, binge eating disorder and bulimia. And he put me in touch with a therapist, and then he said, you should buy this book, Brain Over Binge. I bought the book straight away. And it arrived, and you know what it's like. It kind of just it sat there for months and months, and I was like doing therapy and thinking, like, this isn't getting any better. And then I had a particularly bad weekend. I was alone in the flat, which was one of my like big triggers as well. Kind of when I was on my own, I was able to just eat what I wanted and do what I wanted, and it was just really bad for me. And it was at the end of one of those weekends, and I was going on holiday, and I thought, I'll read a book on the plane. That'll be nice and relaxing. What shall I read? And I thought, I should just read that book.
Mm.
I'm trying to recover from this. I should just read that book. And I read the book on the plane, and that is when the binges started to lessen. Finally, I was able to see like the binges and the urges to binge for what they really were, mm-hmm. which is like neurological junk. Right. I can explain that a little bit if you want.
Yeah, I would like to understand
The book's really amazing. So it's Brain Over Binge by Catherine Hansen.
And link will be in the show notes, listeners.
Yes. And she, the premise is that we've got two brains. We've got the lower brain and the higher brain. And the lower brain is the animal brain that produces urges, like in, it feels like instinct, you know, like, so it produces like the urge to binge and animal urges. Whereas the brain, the higher brain is the more neurologically advanced and sophisticated part that has the autonomy and is able to decide whether to act on these binge urges or not. And I read this, and then I was kind of able to see that I was just producing these urges that were coming into my brain was just neurological junk, and I had the ability to override them, not just like white knuckle through them, you know, like just trying to get through them, which is what I had tried to do previously, just try to take my mind off it by doing this or by that. But if I was able to sit with the urges and see them as if I was seeing them from far away and understanding them and what was going on in my head at the time. And so they started to lessen, and eventually, do you know what? It didn't take long. It was actually after like 1 month after reading that book, I stopped binging completely, and I haven't binged since. So, yeah.
So something in that book just helped you undo.
So it was that book combined with everything that I'd learned during all those years of therapy and understanding that what I was doing was emotional eating and also just eating because you know, our brains are very good at forming patterns. So I'd formed these patterns of binge eating over the years that I was unable to break. But when I was kind of able to see it from like a scientific neurological perspective, I was able to understand what it was and how I could break it.
That's really interesting. Yeah. But tough, I'm guessing.
Yes, very tough.
Yeah. You look stressed even just telling that story.
Do I? Yeah. It brings back, because I was just so obsessed with it as well, because I was desperate for recovery. I couldn't carry on what I was doing. I was like in a state, not just, you know, mentally, but physically, I really needed help.
Now let's talk about, you're a journalist, writer, you work for magazines, and most of my friends do that too.
Yeah.
And we all have public lives and private lives.
Yeah.
And some of my friends who are going through things will document it in real time, and others will experience things, let it ruminate or whatever, and then come back and write about it or what have you. What did you decide to do? Did you chronicle any of this? Did you put it on social media, or did you present a false reality whilst you dealt with it all?
Yeah. It took me, I only talked about it once I felt recovered from it. I didn't feel ready to talk about it. I just didn't really want to talk about it. I kind of insinuated that there were problems, because my Instagram was always like fashion and beauty, and it's very like pink and flowers, and like essentially I was just copying what every other influencer I saw in my feed was doing, and it really didn't mean like that much to me, you know. I felt like I was kind of posting without purpose, and it wasn't sort of speaking to me. And
I think I looked at your feed and just thought, oh, she's too perfect.
That's what Nadine said. It's just like pink and flowers, and
it's like, I can't relate to this woman.
And actually, it's really not me at all. Like, I actually normally dress in black. I listen to emo music. Like, it's really not me. But I was making money from it, and I thought it's what I should be doing, because all the other influencers were doing it. And I remember very distinctly one night I was posting a picture of me in a blue dress against like a yellow floral wall. And it was after a day of really hardcore binging and purging. And sorry if this was all too much information, but and then I was about to post it, and I felt sick. I was looking at the image and I felt sick, and I thought, this is just such bull. Can I swear?
Of course you can, yeah.
This is just bullshit. Like, why am I posting this? I was, you know, physically not feeling well from what I'd been doing. My face was puffy and swollen from what I'd been doing and crying, and I just thought, I'm going to post a picture of me at my various different weights and just explain to people that there's a story behind these squares on Instagram. So I posted a picture showing myself all these different weights, you know, explaining that I gained and lost hundreds of pounds over my life. And that, you know, talking about, you know, just saying that I have so many problems with eating, like, please don't look at this. Please don't look at my feed, my highly curated feed, and think that this is just a girl living her best life, because, you know, it really isn't. And I posted it, and then I went, oh, I'm going to delete it. And I said, no. And I said, I'm going to delete it. And I went back and forth like this. And then I just got so many messages, like, so many girls that from the industry that I knew, my friends, I had no idea had suffered or gone through anything similar. And it felt like, sounds so cringe to say, but it actually felt like a hug when I really needed it.
Wow. Okay.
I was in a dark place, and it just felt so comforting. I thought I was all alone. I thought I was the only one that suffered from... you know, suffered from any eating problems. And this is, like, so common. We just don't talk about it.
You need to help me. Because I remember speaking to a trainer the other day, or not the other day, a while ago, and he said something like, and I think if you have any kind of issue with food, and I definitely feel like I do, which is an emotional issue, I feel ashamed.
Yeah.
So... I feel like people can see, when they see, like, I am bigger, I feel like they can see the fact that I'm not coping because I'm wearing it in weight on my body.
Okay.
And I remember a personal trainer saying to me once something like, your eating habits are the things that you wear on your body.
Yeah.
And it just sort of really compounded that idea of, well, we can see your weakness because look, it's right there on your gut. And that makes me feel... very icky now, even just saying it.
Does it?
Yeah.
Are you an emotional eater?
Oh my God, yeah.
Are you?
No, you'll make me cry. I turn to food for comfort.
Do you? Yeah. And how have you, like, found ways to deal with that? Have you found, like, any...
I don't think I have.
Alternative coping mechanisms or...
No, I don't think I have. No. When I was going through the anxiety and the depression, there was the whole thing got triggered by one particular event.
Yeah.
There was about 6 days when I couldn't eat, and that was really out of character.
Right.
And I was constantly moving, and I couldn't eat. And that's really, really genuinely out of character.
Yeah.
And then when I sort of settled into the anxiety and the depression, it kind of found its groove.
Right.
It was almost like hunting for sugar and bread. It was just, that's the only thing that could give me comfort.
I know that feeling so well.
And I did, like, there were times, God, I know I'm really hormonal at the moment as well, so I really am on a knife edge. Like, I didn't want to leave the house, so I would go out at like 9:45, which is 15 minutes before my local supermarket would shut, and I live near a very big supermarket, and I would run in like pajamas and a long like puffer thingy, and I would get donuts.
Yeah.
That had been reduced to like 15p for 4 donuts. And then I would sit over the sink and I'd be like, I'm only eating the jam. I'm only eating the jam and the bit of the sugary bit. And then you'd look and then I'd put it all down the waste disposal. Like for my birthday, 40 days of 40, Mel Green at It Cosmetics got me one of those beautiful Hummingbird Bakery rainbow cakes.
Yeah.
But it was big.
Right.
So I went home the next morning, I had a slice, then I had another slice, and then I had to put it down the waste disposal.
Yeah.
And I felt awful doing it, but I can't have food in the house.
But I think, do you realise, like, how common things like what you're saying are? They're so, so, so common. But I never realised before. But now so many people open up to me. And honestly, you're, like, I don't want you to think that you're alone in all this stuff, because you're absolutely not. It's so common. We're, like, built to be... We're like, built to be emotional eaters, and it's compounded by society, by diet culture... but emotional eating is like so common. And it's horrible because then you do wear it. You are wearing it.
Yeah.
At least you feel like you are as well. I don't think people are looking at you and thinking anything like that at all. I think people are too wrapped up in themselves to ever sort of...
True.
You know, and that's what my mum always says to me, you know, because I was like terrified when I put on weight, like thinking, oh God, people are going to think this and that. She's like, people care too much about themselves. They're not interested in whether you've...
Yeah, but how many times have you heard someone say, have you seen so-and-so? She's ballooned.
I know, but then they say it, and so what, you know? And so what?
So I just don't want someone to say it about
they
me.
They have a few seconds, like a minute of discussing it between themselves, and then what? You know, it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. So do you get lots of people reach out to you on social media now?
So many, yeah. And I make a point of replying to everyone, which is extremely time consuming.
I bet.
But I feel like I'm like honoured that these people have opened up to me and shared their story. So I can't ignore it. I have to, you know, send them back a proper response. But so many people say they have problems with binge eating.
Mm.
When life gets tough, when they don't feel good about themselves, when they feel anxious, when they feel depressed or hormonal, whatever, they want to eat. And when they feel like that, they want to reach for the bad stuff, the stuff that's got fat and carbs and sugar. Because that is the stuff that lights up the reward center in our brain.
Mm. So it's the quick hit.
It is. It's a very quick hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it feels good at the time, but the euphoria doesn't last for very long.
And I guess I wonder if people write to you and say they equate the emotional eating with not being in control, and then. But I mean, it just sounds like we're all beating ourselves up, and sometimes the way in which we beat ourselves up is by not looking after ourselves. I don't know, is emotional eating and going for the quick hit, the donut, is that the same as being in a place where you're not looking after yourself and not nourishing yourself well? Are they the same thing or are they different?
As in with your diet, not nourishing yourself, or you mean like as in self-care?
Yeah, yeah.
I think emotional eating can exist alongside you practicing self-care as well, but definitely practicing self-care can reduce it for sure.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the top tips you'll get from any nutritionist or dietitian or medical professional about intuitive eating and trying to manage your emotional eating is looking when you at literally at the moment that you look to binge or to find that food that's going to give you the hit, you have to think why am I going to reach for that? What is it behind this? I think it's all too easy to go for that, and then we don't even think about what's behind it. But if we just sit for a minute and think about it, it's really hard, it's so complex. And it's easy for me to like sit here and say, because it's still to this day, it's still a bit of a mystery to me too.
So would you say it's a work in progress, or it is a recovery?
Yeah.
It's not a recovered.
Yeah.
It's you're now managing it as opposed to.
I think binge eating, I've recovered from that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can say, like, touch wood, that with, you know, entire certainty I've recovered from that, and I will never do that again. Who knows? But intuitive eating is not something that comes easily to
so
me.
Please explain to me what intuitive eating is, because I think I've read a couple of bits about it and thought that just sounds like, to me, it sounds like the recipe for me indulging my emotional eating, because there isn't a time when I'm not thinking I would love to be able to have something sweet or carby. But then the second immediate thought is, but you can't have that because you're this, you're that, you're the other. So how does intuitive eating work? How would you describe it for the listener?
Okay, so intuitive eating, for me, it is about eating what your body needs to be nourished rather than what you think you need to eat, or rather than what someone's telling you to eat. So it's listening to we've come so far from listening to our body's signals and trusting our bodies to tell us when we're hungry, when we're full, stop eating now, take a break. We're so far from that it's very, very difficult to get yourself back to that. But that's the idea of intuitive eating.
So
it's to know I'm going to be too full if I carry on eating. I'm hungry now, I need a snack, or I'm hungry, I need a meal. So, but it's extremely hard because we've overridden those signals for so long through diets and binge eating and all the rest.
Well, pleasure eating.
Pleasure eating, yeah. Exactly, eating so locked up with emotions.
I remember, I think it was Amelia Freer's book. Yeah, I think it was. And she talks about the culture of snacking and how that was something that came out in the 80s. And really, I think, again, don't quote me on this, because I obviously read quite a bit and I might have jumbled some of this up. But I feel like the idea of snacking was so that your blood sugar didn't drop.
Yeah.
And so obviously you think about all of the the companies that make snack foods, you know, the big conglomerates and everything. So they started, yes, here's your mid-morning snack, here's your afternoon snack, and snacks became a thing, and it became five meals a day. But now pretty much you go to any of these big nutrition conventions or health conventions, and they say, we don't eat, we don't have a big enough period between our meals for our blood sugars to, for our blood sugar to actually drop. So snacking really isn't necessary.
Yeah.
So it is that thing of, we don't eat because of, I'm hungry, I'm feeling a bit tired, I'm feeling not very energetic, maybe I need some iron.
Yeah.
We don't eat for that reason anymore, anymore. We eat because it's morning, or because it's 11 o'clock, or because...
Yeah, yeah. Or because someone's telling us that, you know, you should eat every 3 hours to keep your metabolism going, you know, or intermittent fast, whatever, you know, and all of it's just like rubbish, really.
So if you could break it down for us in a simple way, like if somebody's about to start, is thinking, I wouldn't mind giving intuitive eating a go, like in a nutshell, is it a case of you wake up one morning and you go, right, I won't eat until I'm hungry?
We've got a curveball here, because dieting obviously creates extreme hunger.
Mm.
And if you've been dieting, it's very hard to go from dieting to intuitive eating.
Right.
Because your body has, I mean, our bodies are programmed to want to stock up on food if it feels like it's been starved.
Mm.
So people who have been dieting for a long time, even people who have been dieting for a short amount of time, will probably overeat. And that's just normal, that's natural. Mm. And you kind of have to... In order to get over that and come out the other side and be able to eat intuitively, you have to get over that period of wanting to eat whatever you fancy, because it hasn't been allowed.
Mm.
You haven't allowed yourself to eat it in the past. It's like anorexic people who have suffered from anorexia, and in their recovery, they often find that they go to a higher weight than they're supposed to be, because suddenly they, you know, it's like a manic, like, you know, I'm allowed to eat all these things now, and I'm just going to go for it. But then once you've done that for long enough, and you realise that actually the crisps will still be there tomorrow if I need them, or I'll have them the next day. I'm not going to deprive myself any longer. So if I want chocolate tomorrow or next week or whatever, I'll be able to have it. I don't need to gorge myself on it. And then you have to... It's hard. I don't want to sound preachy, because I'm obviously, you know...
No, this is just an opportunity to hear your perspective. We're not saying this is the only way, but you have been living and breathing this.
Yes, yes. And reading every book in the sun about it to try and understand it, because it's just not something that comes naturally to me at all. But so wake up in the morning, have a breakfast that's big enough to satisfy you, and then try and listen to your body as you eat it. I know it's easier said than done, but if you take it slowly, I know what helps me is to eat slowly and have breaks in between. I mean, because like my natural instinct is just to gobble it down, like, yeah, inhale it, it's gone. But if I take breaks, if I have a drink, so if I put my fork down and have a drink in between, and then I can start to evaluate how my body is feeling. Like, am I hungry? Do I still want to carry on? Yes. You know, it's called the hunger scale as well, the hunger fullness scale. So that's something that's recommended with intuitive eating, is that you place a number on, like, how full am I right now, and that helps you to decide whether to carry on eating, if you need more,
Which book was this, or is it many of the books on intuitive eating?
Yes, that's many of the books. I think that's like a global tool.
I think I got sent one, and on the cover of the book it had a glazed a donut with hundreds and thousands on it, and I thought... And it, honestly, that made me not look at it.
Is it Just Eat It? That might have been Just
I think
Eat
it.
It
is.
Yeah.
It's on my bookshelf still, because when I saw you at Lindsay's book launch, you said... the contents is good. I think you said don't dismiss it because of the donut.
Yes, yeah.
So it is still there for me to take a look at.
But why did the donut sort of put you off?
The donut put me off because I just think if you're trying to promote a better way of eating, my really hardcore, and I'm quite hard on this subject because I'm so hard on myself.
Yeah.
So listeners, if you think I've been hard on Tess Holliday, please know that it's because I am worse to me. For me, if you say you can, oh, here's an eating program and you can have donuts.
Yeah.
That doesn't compute to me because I think if I'm eating a donut, I'm doing wrong. I'm doing bad. I'm naughty.
But then also we need to neutralise food.
Exactly, yeah.
And get rid of the bad, good. I'm eating better, I'm eating well, I'm eating not so good.
Mm.
That's part of intuitive eating as well, and just eliminating the guilt and shame that we feel around eating.
Mm.
Because if you're going to... I'm really annoyed that I can't remember the phrase, but it's like if you deprive, it thrives. So if you say to yourself, I'm not allowed donuts, I'm not allowed this, it's going to end up being all you want. And you are allowed to have donuts. You should be allowed to have donuts if you feel like it.
But I'm sure, I mean, maybe I'm alone in this, but from what you're saying, but I would be embarrassed to go and buy a donut because I would create a story in my head that the person serving would think, really? Are you sure?
I mean...
But you're so right.
No,
you're
way.
So right. You're so right in that people are too wrapped up in themselves. They might be thinking, oh, 15 minutes till the end of my shift.
Exactly. They don't give a damn about who's coming to them and with what they're... coming to them with all sorts. No one cares. And you should be able to have a donut. If you feel like donuts are nice and they like make us feel good and they're nice to eat, like, why not? Let's have a donut. You know, I'm not saying like we should have, you know, two with every meal, but if you feel like a donut, have a donut.
Yeah.
And trust that you... are going to be able to have a donut whenever you feel like one, and then the need to have one all the time goes away.
Interesting. So now where you are, I mean, we said we come back to it, actually. You talked about how Iskra was instrumental during that time when you were on the road back.
Yes.
And she's been on this show, and she is... I just really enjoy spending time with her, and I did very much get the sense she's a girl's girl. And when I interviewed her for this podcast, she was, God, I can't remember how many, I mean, she has millions of followers, but I was just starting. And she went to real lengths to support me.
Did
and
she?
Like, yeah, oh, she put it on her main grid. She put it on her Instagram stories. And listeners, that's a big deal. Seriously, I think
it
she
is.
Had something like 1.5, maybe it was 5 million followers.
Yeah, she's got around that now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And she put it on main grid and was like, I really like what she's trying to do. Like, she took the... So I have a lot of time for Iskra, so I'm interested. Yeah. It sounds like she's just very warm and... giving to you as well.
Yeah, so I interviewed her for Hello Magazine, and I was at the time like in the depths of bulimia and just like not in a good place, and I'd never opened up to anyone about it, never, ever, ever. And we were having lunch and I just started to cry. What she was talking about just really struck something in me, and I just started to cry, and I told her. And she was so lovely. She was so sweet to me. And then we did a campaign together. Heart Not Hate was the campaign. So there was a picture of us like making a heart with our fingers. And that was seeing her as well, and everything she stood for and everything she was talking about. Not many people were doing it at the time. She was kind of one of the first, and to advocate like self-love and things like that, and it really spoke to me, and yeah, it really helped me in my journey. She was a shining light in my journey.
She is just one of those people, isn't she?
She radiates like light, and just she's lovely.
And so in terms of what you were doing, I guess, has she been instrumental in, or maybe not Iskra, but just the circumstances of then making it a big part of what you talk about? Because I do feel like the things that you naturally want to bring to the surface come to the surface, and then that's obviously what you're moving forward with.
Well, it was the moment that I posted that photo, and I was like, I knew I was never going to go back. Like, that was it. That was my purpose then. And suddenly I felt good about social media and excited about it, and like, I'm going to help people. And then I started to follow other people who were doing the same thing, and it made me feel so good. And I started to diversify my social media feed and follow people that were making me feel not so good. And it like snowballed from there.
Mm.
It really did. And I want to be on social media who I needed to see when I was going through such a rough time. Mm. I want to speak to that person because I just don't think anyone should deserve to go through it.
I think you're speaking to a lot of people, actually, but I think that's always the case. You aim for one type of person and you end up obviously reaching other people. But I think even in this conversation, you've educated me about body positivity because I said to you beforehand, I find it somewhat troubling. I do believe everybody should feel confident. I do feel like everybody should feel comfortable in their own skin because we all know what it's like to be bullied. But I also think we have to be realistic about the health issue. But like I said, even this conversation you've explained, well, they are two separate things in many ways.
Also, you know, there's other terms. There's body positivity, which people can take as a bit like wishy-washy kind of like smiles and rainbows, because it's like you have to love everything about your body. But there's body confidence and body neutrality as well, which I think are both just as important, because you don't have to, like, you don't have to love every part of your body. You absolutely don't have to. There can be bits that you don't like, you don't necessarily think are fantastic and that you want to show all the time, whatever. I think it's got to be more about accepting yourself and being confident in your own skin and acknowledging that no matter what it looks like, even if you've got, you know, I don't know, cellulite and stretch marks and all the rest of that, you know, rubbish that people make money out of, even if you've got all that stuff, your body is still worthy of respect and love. Yeah, and acceptance.
Yeah. It's so true, isn't it? And I do think this idea, as you mentioned Love Island, so for listeners who don't live in the UK and don't have this, it's a television show set in a villa. It's not on an island, is it? No. But all the girls and boys who are selected to potentially fall in love over a 12-week period tend to be very Instagram worthy. So slim, ripped, you know, big boobs, nice tight bottom, all of that kind of, long legs, all of that.
Yeah.
And I've completely forgotten why I was mentioning Love Island, because I got caught up in the tight bottoms. No. yes, but it's about not seeing yourself being reflected back. And I think if you're measuring your body against what you see on TV, then that's really damaging. And like, I've gone away with mates, sat around a pool, and I've seen real women. And I remember we used to go away with a friend who had a great body, and so did her sisters. They really were like
really,
really gorgeous. But it was only when I went away with friends in the last few years, and I have seen people who aren't naturally model-like.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay, so I'm not so weird after all.
No.
But basically it was like I was holidaying with Love Island quality bodies.
Well, yeah, God, no wonder then, no wonder. But like I was saying to you before, like if you were to take in an average, like just a cross section of society, would you get the people that look like they do on Love Island?
No.
And they face backlash for it, Love Island, for this year's lineup, just the lack of diversity. And I think the head of ITV said, this isn't the exact quote, so I'm really sorry, but it was along the lines of, we want to show diversity, but they also need to be attracted to each other.
Oh,
I was like, that is rough. That is rough, and it's just such rubbish. I know. And like, what a way to like perpetuate the message to all these young girls that watch it. Yeah.
Goodness me. Do you think it's just old fashioned? Do you think it's just another old fashioned thing? Because I'm beginning to worry. I'm at that age, 41, where I feel like I'm in this. I worry that I'm in a bit of a danger zone now. In that everything that I grew up with, feeling that I was progressive on. So I now need to make sure that I'm using the right vocabulary, because the vocabulary I might have used in my 20s about issues like race, sexuality, gender, etc., might actually be offensive now.
Right.
In the way that I sometimes sit with my parents, who and I'm like, oh no, that's definitely off the table these days. And I wonder whether I need to almost like go back to school a little bit and teach myself, because I am coming at some of these not new issues, but issues that are being talked about more widely than they perhaps have been, and more publicly and openly. And I feel like I need to almost come in as first day of school, not, oh well, in my old school we used to say this, you know.
Yeah, Yeah, I know, but then I'm also more lenient than the average kind of... I feel like people are just too hard on other people on social media for not using the right terms or for saying something slightly wrong or whatever. We're all like a product of our society. No one's like trying to be nasty. So I think we have to educate ourselves along the way for sure. And what's like going on in the current climate and what we, you know, what is offensive. But then I don't know. I feel like sometimes that stuff's just taken too far.
Yeah, I just wonder whether the whole, the you know, thin is better is old-fashioned. And so it will go the same way of some of the other arguments that have really progressed recently. Some of the other topics that have really progressed recently, and that actually that will seem like a very, like the idea of, I say about couples not, gay couples not being able to marry, but...
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's being, I know, it frightens me, but I just mean... That will become an obsolete, the thinking of thin being good in the way that some of the old restricted... I'm making a mess of this, but you know what I mean.
I already think that the idea that thin is good is an outdated concept, but then I think I have to bring myself back down to earth and realise that we still live in this diet culture and a society obsessed with being thin. But we'll get there, definitely. Mm. We'll get there. There are more voices. There are, like... people like shouting about it and getting angry about it, and we'll definitely get there, I think.
And I think what underpins it, regardless of what's happening in society, from just listening to you, what underpins it really is self-acceptance.
Yeah. There's like a great meme. Is that how you say the meme?
It's unless you watch Real Housewives of Cheshire and Tanya Bardsley, who says Mimi.
I watch all the Real Housewives.
Me too. This is why we're friends.
Yeah, I love them. I love them all. It's my favourite thing to do.
I know. I woke up this morning and watched Real Housewives of New York first thing because last week's was so good with Bethany's meltdown.
I'm yet to watch the new episode, but I'm so excited. Best series on TV. Deserves an Emmy.
Oh yeah.
What was I saying? meme. Meme. Brilliant meme. Yeah. I think I always say men, but yeah.
No, it's meme. Meme. Yeah.
And it's two columns. On the left, it's like what I think I need, and it's like, you know, all the usual: washboard abs, white teeth, thin thighs, blah blah blah. And on the right, it says what I actually need, and there's just one thing in the column, which is self-acceptance. And that's really true. And once you are able to accept yourself for who you are, all the other crap just melts away. But I know it's easier said than done.
But if you're going to get on the road to something, that's a good road to get on, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Alex, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, I really appreciate it.
You're an absolute sweetheart, and I really appreciate you educating me on this, because it is, I do think it can be, dare I say, triggering for some people to talk about these things, but hopefully this has been an open and honest conversation, and if you're listening, you find this has been useful.
I hope so.
All of the links to Alex, the social media, everything else will of course be in the show notes, but for now, Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate you spending time with me and Alex on that episode. If you would like to get in touch with me, please do email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I'd be really interested to hear from you. This is obviously a huge topic that we've just addressed on this podcast, so you might want to talk to me one-on-one on email, or you might want to join the Facebook group where there'll be other listeners of the show, thousands of them in fact, who will be having chats about what we've discussed in this particular episode with Alex. Obviously, all the links to Alex will be in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode of the podcast. And that's also where you get the option to leave a 5-star review and maybe even a couple of comments about what you have enjoyed about this episode or any others that you might have listened to. Thank you so much for joining me. I can't wait to see you on the next one.